Radio Prague News.
The opposition Social Democrat leader Jiří Paroubek has dismissed media reports which suggest that he has ties to the Czech underworld. The Czech Republic has added its signature to a multilateral treaty designed to protect tropical forests from felling across the world. And Josef Souček, a major general who fought against the Nazis on the Western Front, has died in Brazil, aged 91. The opposition Social Democrat leader Jiří Paroubek has dismissed media reports which suggest that he has ties to the Czech underworld. The allegations come as speculation intensifies over the precise content of a detailed 11,000-page police report into connections between mafia members, Czech politicians and civil servants. The document, called Krakatice, represents a police investigation that has gone on for a number of years, focusing in particular on the murdered mobster František Mrázek. Intense speculation has surrounded the report, with confirmations that rebel Civic Democrat MP Vlastimil Tlustý, Interior Minister Ivan Langer, and even Czech President Václav Klaus appear in its pages. The latest allegation surrounding the Social Democrat head is the suggestion that František Mrázek was to attempt to seek Mr. Paroubek's help in a business deal, something which Mr. Paroubek dismissed, with current reports acknowledging no evidence to support an active connection between the two men. Mr. Paroubek also demanded that the Krakatice report be made public. The Czech Republic has added its signature to a multilateral treaty designed to protect tropical forests from felling across the world. The treaty, known as the International Tropical Timber Agreement, was signed by Czech Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg at a session of the UN General Assembly in New York. If the treaty is ratified by the Czech Parliament, the country will become a member of the Tropical Timber Organization, which promotes sustainable logging, poverty reduction and conservation. Josef Souček, a major general who fought against the Nazis on the Western Front, has died in Brazil, aged 91. Mr. Souček was born in 1917 in Salzburg, Austria, and moved to Czechoslovakia shortly after its founding a year later. In 1940, he fled to France, where he joined Czech forces in exile fighting against the Nazis, eventually moving to Britain and ending the war fighting in Dunkirk. Josef Souček was awarded for his gallantry after the war ended, although after the 1948 communist putsch, he emigrated to Britain before moving to Brazil. He was decorated numerous times for his service in Czechoslovakia, France, Britain and Brazil. The German authorities have agreed to loan the original Munich Agreement text to the Czech Republic. The document, which formalized the annexation of Czechoslovakia's Sudeten regions to Nazi Germany in 1938, will be displayed at the Czech National Museum in Prague. Previously, the Czech Republic had been given a copy of the document to be permanently displayed in the Czech Senate, but after some negotiation, the Czech authorities managed to persuade their German counterparts to part with the original. And now a quick look at the weather. Cloudy skies, drizzle and cold temperatures of around 10 degrees Celsius continue, though the weather is forecast to slowly improve until the weekend when sunny skies and warmer temperatures of around 17 degrees are predicted. I'm Dominic Yoon and that's the news for now. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Rob Cameron. Coming up in today's programme, as allegations of corruption and links to organised crime tarnish the image of Czech politics even further, what effect is all this having on the credibility of the country's politicians?
What we see is really a very serious series of scandals and allegations which really, for an ordinary Czech mean only one thing. Politics should not be trusted and politicians are, as a class, basically crooks.
Czech soldiers under pressure in Afghanistan as the Taliban and Al-Qaeda step up their attacks on coalition forces. And misery for rail travellers as thieves make off with vital communications cables made out of copper. Also today in this week's Czechs in History, Rosie Johnston takes us on a guided tour of one of her favourite places, the medieval town of Český Dub in northern Bohemia. Three weeks ahead of local and Senate elections, the Czech political scene is fraught with discord. The Civic Democrats, the strongest party in the governing coalition, has been hard hit by a blackmail and entrapment scandal involving two of its deputies. Last weekend brought another bombshell. The Daily Mlada Front Ardennes alleged that two Civic Democrats, rebel deputy Vlastimir Tlusti and Interior Minister Ivan Langa, as well as the opposition leader Jiří Paroubek of the Social Democrats, had in the past been in contact with the mafia, publishing transcripts of telephone conversations to back its claims. So, with the already tarnished image of Czech politics taking a further battering, what effect will all this have on the forthcoming local and Senate elections? Daniela Lazarová spoke to analyst Jiří Peha.
Well, I'm afraid that this series of scandals will affect the elections in two quite negative ways. One will be a low turnout. I think a lot of voters will simply not bother to vote simply because they feel that it doesn't make any sense. And second, I think it will damage the Civic Democratic Party, which is affected by various scandals the most at this point.
Indeed, this scandal has come at a very bad time, ahead of the country's EU presidency. What are the government's, the governing coalition's chances of surviving?
I think that the chances of the government to survive are about 50-50, because on the one hand, it would be quite natural for the government to collapse right now, given the disagreements within the ruling Civic Democratic Party and its coalition partners. But on the other hand, there will be a lot of pressure from politicians, even in the opposition parties, to keep the government together in some form because of the country's presidency of the EU. It is possible that the government will fall, and at that point, I think that the opposition and the current coalition would get together and try to find some solution for the duration of the presidency.
How will this situation, though, affect people's trust in politicians and the perception of Czech politics in general?
I'm afraid that people's trust in politics and politicians is very low right now, and it could not probably go much lower. I'm afraid that what we see is really a very serious series of scandals and allegations which really for an ordinary Czech mean only one thing: politics should not be trusted, and politicians are as a class basically crooks, and that is a very bad message for any democratic country.
We've heard calls from politicians for special commissions to be set up to investigate these scandals. Do you think politicians are addressing these scandals adequately?
Well, putting together a commission, a parliamentary commission that would investigate these various scandals may be a good thing under normal circumstances, but the problem here is that we are just a few weeks before the elections, and this means that it will be viewed even by voters as yet another attempt of the opposition to somehow weaken the coalition. And also, I'm afraid that this whole exercise will turn into mudslinging, because while the opposition parties will try to investigate scandals within the Civic Democratic Party and within other coalition parties, the Civic Democratic Party, which will have its representatives in the commission, will try to shift the attention to scandals within the Social Democratic Party in particular. So we will see a lot of mudslinging, but nothing will come out of it. And I think that at the end of this exercise, even more people will have problems to trust Czech politics.
So is it time for fresh blood in Czech politics? Because this is an ongoing problem. It's been going on for years and years.
I think that in all major parties, that is all parliamentary parties, time has come for bringing new people into politics. The problem is that the current political class are not very, very much willing to let people in. Political parties in the Czech Republic function like firms which jealously guard their turfs, and they are really not willing to let too many new people in, at least into the positions of power. So we will probably be stuck with this current situation for time to come, and that is not a good message for the Czech Republic.
Analyst Jiří Peha speaking there to Daniela Lazarová. Two Czech soldiers injured in Monday's attack on the Czech provincial and reconstruction team in Afghanistan arrived back in Prague on Wednesday. The rocket attack by the Afghan insurgents was the third on the Czech contingent since it was deployed to the Afghan province of Logar, and the security situation in Afghanistan is further deteriorating. Jan Richter reports.
The Czech provincial and reconstruction team base in the Afghan province of Logar came under attack in the early hours on Monday. Three Czech soldiers were wounded in the attack, two of them seriously. The press officer of the Czech army's second contingent in Logar, Major Jindřich Plešer, describes Monday's attack.
At 2 a.m. on Monday, September the 22nd, there was a rocket attack on the Shank base where the Czech provincial reconstruction team Logar is stationed. Three rockets of 107mm caliber were fired. One of them landed inside the base. Three soldiers were wounded by shrapnel because the rocket exploded near one of the shelters. They were treated immediately. Two soldiers were transported by helicopter to the field hospital in Bagram, where they were given all accessible treatment. The rockets were fired from a nearby mountain range from provisional firing positions some 3 kilometers away from the base.
The provincial reconstruction team arrived in Afghanistan in March 2008. In August, the Czech army's second contingent landed in Logar province to carry on with the development projects in the area, including police training, agriculture programs and the build-up of civilian administration. But Major Jindřich Plešer says the security situation in this part of Afghanistan is not getting better.
The security situation here in the Logar province is permanently aggravated. We've been here for 1 month and this has been the third rocket attack. Unfortunately, on Monday, one of the rockets fell right inside the base. Certain security measures applied to the activities of both our soldiers and our civilian experts. We're trying to take steps to bring the security risks down to the lowest possible level.
The activities of the Czech provincial and reconstruction team in Logar were not jeopardized by the latest attack, but not all the locals, says Major Plešer, welcomed the presence of the Czech military.
The majority of the local population treat us well and with friendliness. There are some areas where they're not happy to see us, where they throw stones at us, for instance, and they don't like us coming here and carrying out some of the projects.
Colonel Jiří Střecha, the commander of the army's first contingent that served in Afghanistan between March and August 2008, told Czech TV after the latest attack that the war against the insurgency can be won if certain conditions are met.
It can be done under certain conditions that have to be fulfilled. My opinion is similar to the view of the U.S. military commanders, in that the number of allied troops in Afghanistan must be stepped up, and also the issue of Afghan-Pakistani relations must be resolved.
The two Czech soldiers wounded in the attack arrived in Prague on Wednesday, while the third remains in Afghanistan and has returned to duty.
Jan Richter with that report. Tell us what you think. Is the West losing the war against the Taliban and Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan? Should Czech troops be deployed there? Send us an email, english@radio.cz, or drop us a line, Radio Prague, 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic. Thousands of rail passengers in Prague have suffered delays this week following the theft, not once but twice, of important telecommunications cables. The copper cables were evidently stolen to be sold for scrap for a fraction of their real worth. By coincidence, a bill aimed at curbing the all-too-common problem of metal theft has just been passed in Parliament. Ian Willoughby reports.
In front of me here at the bottom of Prague's Vinohradská Street is the city's main train station, Hlavní nádraží. Beneath me is the tunnel from which, in the early hours of Tuesday morning, thieves stole 15 metres of copper telecommunications cable used to control switches and signals. While they would have got next to nothing for the metal at a scrapyard, thousands of rail passengers had their journeys delayed and disrupted.
63
trains were delayed, with those delays in total amounting to 2,370 minutes. The situation was completely back to normal about 5 p.m.
Says Czech Rail spokesman Radek Joklík. He and his colleagues had to make a similar statement a day earlier, when the theft of 50 metres of cable from the same spot interrupted trains between the main railway station and Prague's Smíchov station for 7 hours. Czech television reported around 4.5 kilometres of copper cable have disappeared from Czech Rail's lines so far this month alone. But metal thieves don't just target such cables. Two people died stealing scrap iron from a disused factory in Kladno in 2007. In February, a 4-ton railway bridge near Cheb disappeared completely, and over 300 bronze plates with the names of Holocaust victims were stolen from Terezín in April. Those are just the most spectacular examples of what's an all-too-common crime in the Czech Republic. In order to combat it, Czech lawmakers have produced a bill which aims to make it harder for metal thieves to offload their swag at scrapyards. The new legislation on waste was passed by the Chamber of Deputies on Tuesday and now requires the signature of the President. However, it's still to be completed by an Environment Ministry list of what scrapyards may not buy from individuals without checking their ID and keeping a written record. In the case of some items, such as church fittings, scrap merchants would have to keep a written description. They'd also have to hold on to all purchases for at least 48 hours to allow police to look for stolen goods.
Ian Willoughby ending that report on the common problem of valuable metals being stolen for scrap. You're listening to Radio Prague, the English service of Czech Radio, where it's time for Czechs in History. Rosie Johnston has just taken a trip to the North Bohemian town of Český Dub, where she spent the night in a rather spooky museum.
For this week's Czechs in History, I've brought you somewhere rather special, one of my favourite places in the Czech Republic, which is Český Dub. And I'm sitting here at about 10 at night, exhausted after a hard week's work, just about to go to sleep in the local museum, which is all very scary and exciting because there's sort of suits of armour and things downstairs, which I hope won't come to life, you know, when I switch the lights out. And I owe this visit here to the fact that tomorrow morning I've got a meeting with the museum's curator, Tomáš Edel, who's going to tell me about the very important medieval significance of this otherwise not necessarily all that remarkable town of around about 3,000 inhabitants. So look forward to that after a night of ghosts, creaking floorboards and what have you in the museum. Refreshed after an uninterrupted night's sleep, I met my guide, Mr. Edel. Our first stop was also the first big medieval find to be made in the town in recent years, a 13th century Johannite monastery, discovered in the early 1990s. From the outside, the building doesn't look all that much like a monastery. In fact, you can see why Tomáš Edel calls it the oldest block of flats in the world.
People
lived here until the early 90s. We looked for this monastery for years. I was looking for it when I was a child at our summer cottage nearby. I was fascinated by these accounts of a lost Johannite cloister in the neighboring town. I just thought, it's impossible. How could a monastery, a stone monastery, which Charles IV stayed in, have just disappeared?
Zmizel úplně bez stopy prostě.
But disappear it did when, over the centuries, building after building was constructed directly on top of it. The monastery is currently clothed in a 19th century facade. So, what gave the game away?
We started to do some research after communism fell. The Central Committee in Prague hadn't been too keen on us trying to dig up a Johannite monastery. So after 89, we did a few archaeological surveys and found a couple bits of wall from the late Romanesque period. And that gave us an inkling that there was a cloister built around 1250, somewhere in the vicinity. And we started to close in on the source of these remains, and there stood a big block of flats. There were a few old women living in here, chickens running around, and a dachshund or two. And we asked these old women, excuse us, but would you mind us taking a look at your basement? They eyed us with suspicion because they had a few potatoes down there, but finally they let us in. And we took a sample of the walls and found medieval vaulting in this potato store.
A my jsme čukli na osu klenby v tom bramborovém sklepě.
The building is today a museum. The medieval vaulting has been restored and traces of the building's development beyond the year 1300 also remain, from the Renaissance brick platforms put up when the place became a beer store to a set of 19th century doors which decorated someone's home. But the cloister was only the start of Český Dub's medieval hall. Hundreds turned out in May to catch a rare glimpse of an even rarer golden cross. The 13th century artefact is inlaid with Baltic amber and other precious gems. It's even said to contain a bit of Christ's own cross. Oddly, it was found buried with a woman in her tomb. On the site of the discovery, now a windswept open space in downtown Český Dub, Mr. Edel tells me more.
It is here that we discovered a woman's grave. She was certainly an aristocrat and most likely a Markvart, because the Markvarts were the founders of this monastery. Towards the final days of John of Bohemia's rule, she was buried here in this newer wing of the monastery building. And evidently she was buried with the family treasure, with this 150-year-old cross. And this is quite an amazing discovery, because nothing of the sort has ever been found in someone's tomb. There are only two of these crosses in the Czech Republic. The other one is in the safe at St. Vitus's Cathedral. And now we have the second one. In Europe, there are perhaps around 30 of these crucifixes in total.
So, why does Mr. Edel think that the cross was buried with this woman in an unmarked and therefore unplundered grave?
Ona mohla být prostě jeho blízkou příbuznou a
We know she was an aristocrat, but she could have also been a close relative of Havel of Nymburk, who was the head of this monastic order and whose home monastery this was. So for this close relative, they could have behaved in this exceptional way. But why was she buried with the cross? We don't know. We can only guess that maybe she had no children, and that this family treasure was buried with a line of the family which could go no further. But we're really getting into the realms of fantasy, and sounding like the writers of some historic novel by now.
In the relative warmth of the Český Dub Museum, the tireless Mr. Edel shows me his third big find. It's a cabinet from the 15th century, painted with scenes from the Old and New Testament on the right, and fearful creatures like griffins and dragons on the left. Upon finding this artefact, Mr. Edel realised and proved that stencils were used throughout medieval art. But that's not all.
Tak jsme si vlastně uvědomili,
we realized that these stencils were big and that the cabinet was in fact too small for them. It became obvious that these stencils were made to cover a bigger space than just this furniture. They were made to decorate people's interiors. And then one time I was in Bavaria, where I found a photo of a painted ceiling in some manse. The description said that it was a late medieval painted ceiling, but something didn't seem right. So I took the stencils that we made to recreate this cabinet, our deer, our griffins, and so on, and I placed them against the ones painted on this Bavarian ceiling, and we saw that they had been painted from the same stencil.
So there's proof that a roving stenciler was wandering around this part of Central Europe in the Middle Ages, and proof of what Mr. Edel calls one of the first forms of mass production, dating from the time before the printing press. And all this from Český Dub. Not bad for a town otherwise famous for, being close to Liberec.
Czechs in History, bringing us to the end of today's programme. And don't forget, you can hear that programme again online at our website, radio.cz, Our email address is english@radio.cz and our snail mail, Radio Prague, 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic. That's all from us. So from me, Rob Cameron, and everyone here at Radio Prague, goodbye.
Slunečko zachodí za Janovu horu a už bude večer, chvála Pánu Bohu. Slunečko zachodí za veliký kámen a moje srdenko zahoří jak plamen. Zahoří, zahoří bolestí na dluze, že moja frajárka do večera umře.